Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Dan Wyke, the Misty May trainer of the Orange County Register, covering the Los Angeles Clippers and everything basketball. Dan, how are you?
I am more like a young Karch Karai, I feel like.
Oh, that's a reference I don't get.
He played volleyball.
Okay.
Too. Just because, no, here's the thing. So those are people that know, like, we do a little pre-show conversation. We talk for, like, maybe, I don't know, 180 seconds, and I didn't realize you were going to use everything I said against me.
I feel like I do that most of the time, unless you tell me not to.
I mean, I didn't bring up the fact that you can't wash your hair without paint.
I can't. Thank you for bringing that up. There's a minor shoulder injury right now that's causing me a lot of pain. Advil. I bought Icy Hot.
And did you just see, like, the Pantene Pro Vegan and start to ache up?
I had to, like, kind of put my own blinders up as I walked by the shampoo.
She's like, I won't let you get me again.
And how about this? This is something we didn't talk about pre-show, but it's something I'm really into right now. As I walked past the Pantene Pro V, I went and got myself some secret deodorant.
Oh, you're using female deodorant now?
It's amazing.
DeAndre Jordan uses female deodorant.
It's my favorite. Like, the other stuff I feel like wears off. This doesn't wear. It truly is strong enough for me.
But pH balance for a woman.
Right,
well,
exactly. Yeah, so
your pH balances are great, which I feel like would be just a good thing to have in general.
Yeah.
To have, like, good, strong pH balance. But then, it is lasting all day. Is it a feminine scent?
It's a baby powder. It's a powder fresh. So I feel like that's pretty neutral.
Okay. See, I've been rewarding Old Spice's incredibly bizarre ad campaigns by purchasing Old Spice recently.
I'm a little sick of... This is not against Old Spice, because they may be a sponsor someday or anything. I'm just talking about advertising in general. I'm kind of sick of, like, let's make these commercials as weird as possible. I know we're reaching out to the youth.
They've got to be really weird. They've got to be really weird for me to, like... I mean, like... like, where you've got, like, you know, an Asian mother slotting through the ball return at a bowling alley to sell the odor, and that you don't make that connection?
No, I mean, that's a great one. She's talking about, like, how her son's a sexy man in that commercial, which that's...
I know.
That's
it's
uncomfortable.
Super weird.
Yeah, it's not so much weird as it is uncomfortable. Let's say you had a commercial for, I don't know, just, I'll pick a topic... A product off the top of my head, like a phone, like some kind of cellular phone service, and there was, like, a hamster dad and, like, a French person and, like, a Southern kid. Like, that's just too weird for me.
I will tell you, I find his accent. I've lived in the South. I'm a friend of the South. I'm a friend of all people, mostly, but specifically, I've lived in Mississippi. That accent in that commercial is so off-putting.
It is. I lived in Mississippi as well, and I have family from Georgia. I've never heard that accent in my life.
Yeah, no, but he's cool with Kevin Durant, so that's good.
Yeah, I mean, allegedly, in this make-believe commercial we've thought up. Why
that
not?
Commercial is so weird. That commercial, I don't like, and it's weird that I don't mean that. What's interesting about that commercial is that it spawned, like, spinoffs. Like, it's an entire campaign just built around, like, somebody's, like, acid, like, fever dreams.
Right.
Like,
and maybe that's the thing. Maybe that's, like, you know, Sprint is so good that it'll make you feel like the world doesn't make sense. Because we're so used to cellular service being bad. I mean, there's not a single company where someone... says, like, oh, I've got this service, and it's great. Like, I never hear that. But maybe Sprint is so good that that's how it feels.
I like that they've used the goth kid, and they've like, taken, like, 60% of, like, a Cure song.
Sure.
And, like, just enough. Like, it was, like, there was a conversation where they were, like, okay, how much can we rip off the Cure without getting sued? Like, what's the point? And they walked right up to that line, and I kind of admire that.
Yeah, I feel like it would be, you know, there's got to be something where you can use actual music for podcasts without getting sued. And I feel
like
that.
I would think, right?
Yeah, I mean, why not? Why do they get all the rights to their songs? I'm trying to promote their
music.
I
think you should start just spamming, like, rappers on Twitter. Try to use, like, the first, like, 20 seconds. Like, now that you're around here, you should be letter writing Rick Ross, like, every, like, like every hour you should write a letter and just, you don't even have to mail it, just drop it at his house.
Right, yeah, no, I could get to his house pretty easily. Yeah, I feel like I could at least tweet Rick Ross once a day and say, like, hey, I'd like to use your music on the podcast. And why wouldn't he say yes?
I know what your pitch is going to be. You're gonna say, quote, do you know any followers I have? It's a little inside, but...
Yeah, what I don't even really... I remember, I mean, that happened in our trip to Vegas, but I don't really remember what I was...
You were talking to a blackjack dealer.
Oh, and that's right.
Like a 7 or something like that.
She was taking our money.
Yes.
This was at Bally's or Palazzo or Venetian or where.
When did you go to Bally's?
I went to Bally's one night. It wasn't Bally's, but I went to Bally's and I learned how to play craps. That was fun.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, this was, we were at the Palazzo. And it wasn't going well until I started throwing my followers in the face of the dealer, and we started, I think we were arguing, we were rooting against each other, and then we started, I think we were quoting, like, Trick Daddy songs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
And then we did quite well. It was fun.
That's another guy, if you could use, I mean, he's not doing a ton right now, you could probably, you could maybe even be on the podcast.
He's a Miami guy. I could get Trick Daddy on the podcast.
Hit him up, trickplus.com.
And Silk the Shocker follows me on Twitter now, so I can get... I'm just going to have a great early 2000s rap reunion.
If that doesn't work out for you, I can direct message my follower, Sean Stockman of Boyz II Men.
Wow.
To see if maybe Motown Philly's available.
Let me give you a chance to pick up that name you just dropped.
I know.
Speaking of dropping, Donald Sterling's not dropping his lawsuit, or maybe he is. It changes day by day.
Professional
segue. You have been covering this Donald Sterling mess for quite some time, from audio tape to him calling his wife various names in court.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we know. What happened in terms of, like, the tape and what he said, and
sure.
And then there was the sale to Steve Ballmer,
mm-hmm.
is it a hard
Ballmer?
L?
Ballmer.
Of yeah. Microsoft fame and fortune, especially yes. Fortune, $2 billion
fortune,
yeah, $2 billion sale, and maybe a few zunes thrown in there, and this is a. And this was supposed to, like, all right, the Clippers are sold and the Sterlings are out of our lives, but they're not so much out of our lives.
No, and they're not going to be for a while. And that, for fans of in-court intrigue, salacious accusations, just general kind of embarrassing, like if you want to see the cover kind of rip back on some of your least favorite rich people, like this is the trial for you. It's been a really kind of fascinating insight into maybe certainly the most complicated marriage I've ever seen in my life.
Sure.
And kind of learning kind of the inner workings of this team, the way that generally speaking, documents such as I don't know, and maybe I'm wrong, but like when the Milwaukee Bucks got sold, I don't know that the actual like binding term sheet of that deal with all the minutia and all that stuff was ever like, oh, here, it's in the public record now. I don't think that ever happened.
Right.
That's been like, here, it is like, if there's anything involved with this sale and it's a document, it is out there. So you got stuff like that. You've got the family trust document. You've got the bid sheet and like kind of the evaluations done by Bank of America. You've got Donald Sterling's medical results. For things like, when he was asked to count back from 100 by 7, he couldn't get past 93. And just all sorts of stuff. He couldn't draw a clock right for fans of Hannibal. recognize that as a test. I believe one. Things like that is all just like out in the ether now. And it's remarkable how public this got. I mean, obviously, I mean, it's super messy, and that's what I think what people are drawn to most is that this is stuff you don't normally hear about, and now it's just all out there, and it's like just out there for consumption.
So where are, what is this current suit that he has against the NBA? Like what he's trying, like he's suing them for like defamation?
He's suing them a bunch of different ways. Like essentially what it boils down to for him is that he, to me at least, my understanding of where he's at, he wants the NBA to take the team. You know, I think, which seems weird because it seems like he's fighting it, and he is. But I think in his heart of hearts, he knows he can't own the team. Not long term, certainly. So he wants to make it as difficult as possible on NBA in the short term while almost forcing them to take the team. So now he can really argue damages. If they take the team and sell it for $2 billion, he can prove that in 5 years or after he died, in 6 years when, you know, his children were going to sell the team maybe or something like that. He can prove that they lost out on, say, $1 billion, or as he would even say, $2.5 billion. I'm sorry, $3 billion. He said he could get $5 billion, which says a lot of things, but he did say that. You know, if I mean, we're talking, if we get to that kind of level, and now he can sue the NBA for a ton of money.
Right.
And I've always felt like he's got a little bit of a stronger case against the league than he does against his wife, just in the sense that, you know, there's, he's not the first person in the NBA to say something that is, controversial, you know, hate speech. He's not the first person to use it, you know. And in his original lawsuit against the NBA, he detailed a bunch of people who've done and said things in the past and kind of the lack of punishment. I mean, one of the league's most popular personality, Jack, has said all sorts of wildly inappropriate stuff. This is, I mean, you know, There are people, Kobe Bryant's mentioned in that lawsuit when he used a slur. And he did that on TV. Donald will argue that I said something in the confines of my living room that was illegally recorded, and I get the steepest punishment in league history. That's his argument. And I think it's an interesting one. I don't know how. I feel like the league has the power to do what it needs to do based on what my understanding and what I've read in the Constitution and my interpretation of it. But I'm not a lawyer, so, you know, I'm not a lawyer.
No,
you're not. That's what they're arguing. That's kind of where he's at against the league, is that he wants them to act. He's basically saying, oh, you guys all tough-talked and said that, you know, you're going to vote me out unanimously? Prove it. And by the way, I've got PIs investigating every one of you.
All right, let's talk about the tape real quick.
Okay.
This is illegally recorded, or I mean, wasn't there something where she said she was like, basically like recording, like archiving his thoughts on things?
Yeah.
So
she said that she's his archivist.
Right. And okay. this is true, or it's not true, or we'll never know.
I mean, I don't know. I mean,
is this how she got three luxury automobiles?
For his purposes, it bought her so many visors.
A lot of visors. She could do any taxes.
I know. Oh, it's amazing. No, I think that it's like, I suppose that's her defense. I mean, she hasn't been charged with anything yet.
Right. And know? So this guy is such a litigation and sue happy person that wouldn't.
Also, forgiving, surprisingly.
They
went to. When she did the Barbara Walters interview, my understanding at least is that, you know, she went and she was there. I'm sorry, obviously she was there. It was her interview. That Donald was there. Originally Donald wasn't speaking. Like, almost like they went together. So, I don't know. Like I said, it's complicated.
Yeah.
He's a complicated man. He's a lot like Shaft.
He is a lot like Shaft, except Shaft is the type of person he doesn't like, allegedly.
Hey. A man of law? let's deal with that real quick. I've got a theory on Donald Sterling that watching him, and kind of seeing this, I don't know that I would classify him necessarily as, like, you know, I think racist is too general.
Okay.
Or, I'm sorry, too specific. It's too specific. I don't really feel like he's got, like, an actual distaste for people of different races and stuff. I mean, obviously, he's very willing to hang out with mixed race women. You know, he's very willing to do stuff like that. Not that that means he's not a racist, but I think it's just a it's almost like a larger kind of detest for everybody who's not him.
He's just a narcissist. You know,
yeah, he's just I don't know. That's just based on the court testimonies, the ways that he's talked about his wife and stuff like that. Like, it just feels like it's part of like a bigger kind of a bigger like sort of umbrella of just distaste for people.
Yeah, he could be bigoted in theory, but also certainly just be more narcissistic than bigoted, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and here's the crazy thing. So when we're in Vegas, you know, and I'm talking to people there, and people know or find out what I do and stuff like that. Obviously, they ask me about Donald Sterling. I'm talking about players, other people around the league, and stuff like that. The interesting response from players, though, is that they all want to know about him investigating the other owners.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they want to know. They don't want to know, like, which is weird. I joked, I forget who I was speaking to, one of the players that there, that we joked sort of about how he should be one of the finalists for the Players Association, you know, union chief, because who hates the other 29 owners more than Donald Sterling right now? And it's like, he's trying to get dirt on all of them and stuff, and he's trying to get all this together. He's the perfect guy to fight the NBA.
Oh,
you
man.
Know,
Donald Sterling as the president of the union would be great. That would be a plot twist.
Yeah, right. In a story that has had so many weird ones. That sounds outrageous. Obviously, it'll never happen. But it really wouldn't even be the strangest thing that's happened in all of this. You know, and I don't even know what the strange thing is, but it's been weird. I don't know. I just think that it also opened my eyes up to the kind of the divide between players and owners and how real that is too. And
how so?
I guess the willingness that certain players that I spoke to there had to kind of just brush off what Donald Sterling said, and sort of kind of an interest in terms of finding out really what they know about the other 29 guys. You know, one of the things that came up was, you know, in court he testified along the lines that there's a bunch of missing money, millions and millions and millions of dollars, and David Stern knows where this money is, and that part of the reason the other owners in the NBA have it out for him is because he's been the guy who's asked the questions. Okay. Now, most people, I think, would look at that as sort of a kind of especially when your mental competency has been questioned and stuff like that, it's sort of kind of maybe, you know, like the ravings of like a madman or something like that.
Right.
The players that I'd mentioned that to said that they don't doubt that. You know, like, you're probably right.
Right.
It's been a common response from players. So, and I should mention, these are non-Clippers.
Okay.
Too. I think that the feeling within the Clippers organization is a little different. But from the outside, it's been a really interesting kind of aspect of this, has been how players have reacted to this. In terms of especially once they found out that he was going to try to take down the NBA and the other 29 owners with him.
Wow. So... All right,
he's not flummoxed.
Well, there's just so much to process with this crap. Let's talk about the in-court stuff, because if you look over past testimony with with lawsuits he's been in, like, he is an overbearing, like, very in-your-face, kind of an and it's just, like, this is how he, I'll bleep that out. This is how he is. Like, this is just how he acts. And he's acting this way in court, but you also have this new caveat of, oh, well, he has dementia. And so, like, some people are saying this is really sad to see him acting this way. I mean, you've been in court. Like, to me, this just reads like, this is how he always acts when he is.
That's what his lawyers have said.
Yeah, and, like,
that,
so this,
like, I mean, that... That he's not mentally incompetent, that this is him, that this is very much him. I mean, and you know, I tend to kind of agree with that. I mean, he's not someone I've had a ton of contact with, you know, in my job covering the team over the past 2 years. He's not very hands-on, at least the extent, you know, he's not hitting the elliptical like Mark Cuban pregame or sure. like that, you know. The thing with him on the stand is, like, he does sort of rotate between, I mean, he can be very sharp.
Right.
Like, you hear it. I mean, like, and he's, like, next-level passive-aggressive, too. I mean, like, this is the type of stuff that is like, world-class passive-aggressive.
What is he, like, 82? I mean, he's 82 years old?
80 years old.
80 years old.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, I mean, he'll do stuff like, you know, he was being cross-examined by an 85-year-old, an 85-year-old attorney this a couple weeks ago, and his name's Burt Fields, and... You know, he would ask Burt Fields how long he's been practicing law for. you know, like things like that. He would repeatedly ask him what his name is. And he would do it in a way, not like, I don't remember what you said your name is. Like, I don't care about you. You're going to have to keep saying. Almost the way, like, Monty Burns doesn't remember Homer Simpson's name ever.
Right.
It was like that. Like, you're nothing to me. There were elements of that. One of my favorite ones was that at one point in time, Burt Fields referenced the $2 million sale of the Clippers. And Donald Stern goes, millions? Millions? Oh, you're just terrific. You know, and it's just like, so, I mean, you say a-hole. He's certainly that to a degree. I mean, like, some of the stuff he said about Shelley has been pretty horrible. He's also just, like, incredibly difficult. I mean, go watch the old deposition. I would encourage everybody listening to this to go find the deposition video that ESPN has unearthed before where he accuses someone of hitting on him during a deposition. That
sure.
was like over 10. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like, he is razor sharp that way in terms of like, he will slip on you. You like, it doesn't matter if it was, he was going after his lawyers, he's going after Shelley's lawyers. It didn't matter. It was really... He was all over the place in that regard. And it was, as far as the dementia part of it, you know, again, we're talking about early stages too. It wasn't like, you know, I think people, when they hear that word, they have a mental image of this is someone who doesn't know where he's at.
Right.
And stuff like that. You know, at least in what I've seen, he seemed very present that way. Forgetful at times, maybe. But, he said he was also super, like, when it came to, like, trying to cut people down, he seemed pretty together.
Yeah, so I guess, like, that's the weird thing for me is I'm saying, like, some people want to play the other side and just say, well, this is sad, like, we shouldn't make fun of him. I'm like, I don't know, this is how he acts. Like, this just seems like he's Donald Sterling.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're in the courtroom, like, you've been live-tweeting, or you were live-tweeting the proceedings, and... It all seemed like great theater.
Oh, it certainly is. It's funny because that's something I've kind of struggled with throughout this too, in terms of like, you know, if you view him as someone who has, you know, like he's suffering from Alzheimer's disease, flat out suffering from Alzheimer's disease, you know, like it. Like, part of me feels really uncomfortable with him being up there and saying ridiculous things and,
sure.
and stuff like that. You know, like, I'm not super comfortable with it. And I've struggled with how to deal with that in my writing. Now, you know, he's had doctors and stuff that I feel like, you know, like he's, and they've said things like, you know, that's ridiculous. He clearly doesn't have Alzheimer's. He's clearly, you know, together and stuff like that. So, you know, I've tried to play just kind of, as sort of down the middle as I can on it, you know, in terms of like, especially in the tweets, like not really trying to like joke about the things he said. I mean, you don't have to.
No, like, it writes itself.
Rich.
Yeah.
You just, there it is. Yeah. You know what I mean? And, but there have been like, you know, certain things, you know, Adam Streisand, who's Steve Ballmer's probate attorney for this, has been in the courtroom representing Steve Ballmer. You know, one of the things he says is that, you know, he's done so many of these that, you know, types of different, you know, probate type stuff that, you know, one of the signs is when people have these wild outbursts and everything. And that clearly during, This case, now somebody's had wild outbursts. Now, this is another person's attorney talking on the opposite side with sort of, reason to suggest that, he's incompetent. That's why he was removed, and that's why the trust is what Shelley did. It should be affirmed and all that stuff. And it's complicated, man. And I'll be excited just to talk about basketball again someday. I'm not saying we have to stop. I'm just saying. I'm not saying no. I mean, we can keep asking questions about it. It's super interesting.
Yeah.
It's just it's so
it's dizzying,
funny,
right?
So, yeah. It's like I have these conversations with my editor every day after court, right? Where it's like how important was what happened today? And I go to try to tell him what happened, and I fall down this like giant rabbit hole. And it's like then this meant, and then this means that they couldn't do this motion and that motion. And it's like, this is stuff I have a very surface understanding of that I've tried to learn, throughout this process. And I'll talk to my editor, and he'll kind of just shrug his shoulders and sort of like, well, okay, just write what you need. And then after I write it, it's like, okay, now I can kind of, like, that's what happened today. That's why this is important. But it's really hard to explain.
Okay, so is there going to be, circling back to what you said earlier about, like, the investigating other owners and stuff, there's going to be, this is Sterling, like, there's going to be an atomic bomb of sorts at some point, right? Of, like, here's what I found out about everybody. Like, there's no way he lets that go.
Well, I mean, he is vowed to fight the NBA for every day for the rest of his life. And now, how much you want to take him, at his word for that, I think that there's certainly an element. He feels embarrassed.
Sure.
By his life and by the league, by the way that they have supported things like, the releasing of his medical records and the results of this examination. I do think that there's elements of that that he wants to fight back, certainly. I do think that these are people that he genuinely felt, some sort of relationship, the other 29 owners in the league. And I think he does, again, feel abandoned slightly by them. The fact that they all came out in the aftermath of the Silver decision and said, we're going to support Adam Silver. I think that, he said as much that privately they've told him differently. But, so I just think that he called the NBA the worst business in the world, the most evil corporation in the world. He is like the Terminator right now, and he is like all focused on the NBA. I think he would love to win in probate court. Right. I think he would love to keep the team as long as possible. I think that he realizes that I don't know that he truly believes that eventually a judge will come and say, you know what, the NBA can't punish you. You get to keep the team. The ban is rescinded and you're the owner again. Because I think he knows what would happen if that happened. And then the players wouldn't play.
Right. Let's talk, that's my next question is that, we're starting to get comments about Doc Rivers may not be back if Sterling still owns the team into next season. Chris Paul's talking, allegedly talking about a boycott. So the sale had to have been completed by July 15th, right? But there was an extension to August 15th, and
there's another extension.
Yeah, and then September 15th is like the deadline when the league starts trying to go back into taking him out and taking control of the team, and there's all that. So at what point do we see if anybody's going to blink?
Okay, so these deadlines and stuff and these dates so far in the contracts, I feel like they're all fairly fluid. So for instance, let's say Donald Sterling, closing arguments are Monday, and the case that Shelley actually brought, not Donald, but Shelley brought to court, saying, I'm looking for affirmation of my actions. I am looking for, and I'm also looking for the court to provide me a ruling that allows me to continue the sale despite appeal. Okay?
Right.
Now, there's still other things that they can do to kind of slow down the sale, but that would be the huge win for Shelley Sterling. That's and that's the dream scenario for the NBA. However, if Donald were to win, or if Donald were able to win the right to an appeal, and this is going to take months, at any point the NBA can step in. Really, you know what I mean? They can, and I think that if Donald won, I think that they would very quickly again re-kind of ignite the movement to vote him out. That's sort of in their back pocket. Ironically enough, that's what Donald wants, it seems like, and he said as much on the stand. So, you know, and then that would, the sale could, you know, he would try to get an injunction and stop it that way, but I still feel like that the sale would eventually move on, and then he would just sue the NBA independent of the sale.
Jesus.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It makes sense as much as this can make sense, but it's just...
It's almost like, I mean, here, like Zach, I don't think that Donald Sterling is going to own the Clippers on the first day of next season.
Right.
I don't think so.
Like, this is all done by training camp, right?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't know when it finishes, and I don't know, like, if we're talking levels of doneness, too.
Right.
You know what I mean? But because I do believe that the Players Association will get involved.
Sure.
I do think that there will be boycotts. And I know that advertisers will also boycott. And when local advertisers boycott, that's a precursor to national advertisers boycotting.
Right.
And so there's a lot of pressure on a lot of different people to make sure that Donald Sterling is not the owner of the Clippers at the start of next season. I just think, and this is my opinion, that really what he's fighting for is he's fighting for his best chance in round two for him, which is, you know, Sterling versus the NBA. And his best chance is for his best chance against the NBA is if the NBA physically comes in and takes the team and then sells it on his own. Because as of right now, they haven't forced the sale of the Clippers.
Is this the part of the movie where like we get two different training montages? One's Adam Silver, the other one's Donald Sterling. They're like getting legal pads out and you know getting Manila folders and all kinds of stuff.
We're close to that part. I think we're at the end. We're coming into the end of like the first part of like what's sure to be just like a blockbuster series of films.
Okay.
So this is like. Like, we're coming up to the to be continued because this would be too long, I think. You know, but, so, like, this is really, I mean, the probate case is still the most important thing. Like, if Shelly can somehow win all elements of the probate case, and there are three, the two that I mentioned, the third being is, you know, right before she filed in court, Donald revoked the trust, which is a right, you know, he's competent enough to revoke the trust. Not common enough to be a trustee, which is confusing, but it allows for that. And so by revoking the trust agreement, now does it even belong in probate court? And
right. Are
Shelley's actions... So that's what Donald's team is going to argue. What Shelley's team, is going to argue in their closing arguments is that this is absolutely part of winding down. The winding down of kind of the affairs of the trust that, you know... They already had an agreement in place prior to the revoked trust. And, you know, you can't just say, I'm revoking the trust and then the deal falls apart because that would be a nightmare. That'd be a nightmare precedent. So if she somehow wins all of this stuff, I mean, there's a chance that this can still happen pretty cleanly. I'd say there's a good chance. I mean, you know, they'll file their appeals and they'll file something called a writ that'll slow down the process.
Right.
But it can still be done by September 15th, certainly that way. What gets confusing is if Donald wins a part of this trial, then it gets muddled. And I think then maybe we start to see, Adam Silver doing push-ups in the Siberian desert. So they don't have the desert in Siberia. What is it?
Well, there's a tundra. It's like a frozen desert. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that's where, like, you know, he'll use the same cabin Rocky used in Rocky IV.
Sure.
Hopefully the logs are still there. He'll be doing those insane sit-ups. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
Where he's, like, sitting and hanging off the ledge?
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg kind of does something like that in Pain and Gain with, like, a ladder on the side of a building.
Yeah, that seems difficult.
Yeah. I'm not in good enough shape to do something like that. Especially not with the shoulder injury.
Okay, here's what would happen to me if I had to do that. So I want you to imagine, you know, my legs are like hanging over the ledge of the building, and I like the ledge in the bar. And I lean back to do the first sit up, and then just my feet just go flying. Just fall horribly to the ground. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we're at on this right now. I hope that's like a good enough load. It's just like, I do believe the players, though. I really do. I mean, it might be partially a bluff, but everything that I heard was that they were giving real consideration to not playing games in the playoffs. You know?
That's crazy. I mean, there was that whole thing of like, oh, everyone would have walked off the court after the jump ball or something like that. And who knows if that actually happens, because it's easy to say it once you don't have to do it. But
isn't
it
a lot easier to say it and do it when it's October 28th?
Yeah, that's the thing, is that now you can make a statement that to start the season a lot easier than you can, like, game five of a playoff series, or game four of a playoff series.
I mean, let's just throw this scenario out there, okay? Let's assuming that Cleveland plays on opening night.
Yes.
Okay? That they are the first game of the NBA season. LeBron James' return. Let's also assume that they're home for this. Okay? And if that's the case, do you think the league really wants to put themselves in a position where at the jump ball, LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers walk off the court as a sign of solidarity with the Players Association?
Let's say that there is a boycott and they do walk off after the jump ball. Does a fan still rush the court in Cleveland if there's nobody out there playing?
I like that. It's what does a one-handed clap sound like?
Right.
It's a very existential question.
I
think they will still rush the game. No, but I mean, like,
the league couldn't risk
that's
that.
Just not a situation they want to be in.
Right. And that's what I wonder too, is there, all right, clearly the nothing gets done by September 15th, and the NBA goes back to this committee and doing the owner vote and trying to get it out as quickly as possible. If it's not, 100% tied up by opening night, do the players still look at it and say, like, all right, well, they tried going the right way, they're doing this, it's almost done, we'll still go play? Like, that's kind of an interesting, at what point do the players stop believing it's going to happen and wait for, need to be shown hard evidence?
And I'll say that, if that's the case, which just because, they come in and the NBA, initiates that vote, there are still things that Donald can do legally to try to stop that as well.
Right.
Injunctions and such, my understanding at least of that. So, I do think that there's, like, and that's where I think that there is a chance that, that if he does own the team, you're right, what will the players do? Will they look at it and say, look, you tried. You know what I mean? You've tried everything here. Everybody's been willing and doing the right things, and we haven't just been able to pull this off. It's good enough. We'll play. We'll soldier on. If that does happen, it is going to be a miserable season, especially early in the year for the Clippers.
Oh yeah,
like that is not going to be good for them. They were super devastated that they lost at the end of the year. They wanted to keep playing, but they were exhausted mentally and physically. And I think mentally it was from the fact that you're constantly being asked questions about it. You're getting ready to play the Oklahoma City Thunder. I remember I was in the airport and I was watching through some like hacked stream of CNN because Time Warner doesn't stream CNN. And I watched, Donald Sterling say on Anderson Cooper things like, the players on the Clippers still love me. So, what do you think we asked the players about, the next morning at shoot around?
Right.
And that's going to be a cycle that's going to continue.
Right.
Certainly. Because it'll dominate everything they do and say. I mean, it'll dominate, Doc, are you going to quit? Chris, have you guys considered a boycott? I mean, there's all sorts of this stuff over the course of an 82-game season. If this is still, these legal things are still ongoing, it'll be a nightmare. It's going to be bad no matter what, because they're still going to have to answer questions about it. My feeling is, even if the team gets sold, that there'll still be discussions of it.
Right. That's at least a topic for the first couple weeks of the preseason.
Sure. Well, then it becomes, how good is it to have that cloud lifted?
Right.
I mean, I'll say this about sports writers. We are super predictable.
Right.
And like the narrative for that is already written, is like, you know, the first time that they go out, and I can almost read the column now about how they went on opening night in front of their new owner, and they're playing with the rejuvenation of being like no longer oppressed and having to deal with this mess and stuff. It's there.
You're writing it as we talk.
I may have already done it.
You just have to fill in names, point totals.
Yeah, man. It's like there's a template for sure for how to cover the Clippers when this happens. But you're right. Like, I don't know. It's like, that's a fascinating thing. And I wonder too, obviously, you know, the players union is doing what they can to kind of, you know, finally get a little more direction too. And I wonder how their new direction is going to view, what actions they're going to take as well. So it's going to be really interesting.
Hey, do you want to talk some basketball?
Let's do it.
We're still going to talk about the Clippers. They've had an off season where
they did.
They had an off season in between court sessions where they got Jordan Farmer, they got Spencer Hawes, they drafted C.J. Wilcox. Do we feel better about the roster than we did at the end of last year?
You forgot about a re-signing.
Re-signed.
Big Baby.
Oh, the Big Baby. The Big Baby one. Yes.
Yes. So that's like more chance to talk about
the
music.
The purveyor of P.F. Chang's.
He's great.
He's all right.
Yeah, he's going to be, he's such a good interview. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, I think they got better. I think they addressed some needs. Obviously, I don't think they wanted to lose Darren Collison, but when a team was going to throw the full meta level at him, they weren't willing to match that. You know, so I think that they got Spencer Hawes on a deal that, in hindsight, for what role kind of players were making early in this offseason, they got him at a discount with the mid-level exception. You look at guys like Channing Frye. The Jordan Hill deal is totally different, but like a guy like Channing Frye getting more. And then you look at, you know, Farmar with the biannual as kind of a stopgap. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's funny. You look at the Clippers, and I think a lot of people will view this offseason as that their biggest need, which was to get better defensively, wasn't addressed.
Right.
You know, because they added guys that didn't. That generally won't help them defensively. I think that Doc Rivers has a confidence, though, in his ability to coach players who aren't known as defensive players into being good defensive players. So I think that he believes that they're good enough that way, and he wanted to address some of their shortcomings offensively, which is weird because they were one of the best offenses in the league last year.
Yeah, I think they were tied with the Heat for the best offense, right? Or somewhere along those lines,
right.
In terms of efficiency, like they were.
Yeah, they were either first or second. I can't remember.
Yeah, they were right there, and I mean, I am not a Spencer Hawes guy at all.
Okay.
Why
a big guy who likes to shoot threes? That sounds like that's right up your alley.
You would think so, but I feel like I don't know. I just feel like he detracts from. Like he's a guy who has every skill you'd want for a nice offensive team player. And for some reason, I feel like he just butchers it all. Like, I don't know what it is about him. It might just be his personality I don't like. But there's something about him where I don't feel like he adds to a team. Well, I will say this. Like, he's never been the third big man at this, you know, skill level before, right? Like, he's gotten to this point and he's been a starter. And now he won't be a starter.
He's on a good team. And he's on a good team.
He'd be a good coach. So... you know, there's a chance he can shine in that role, and it is. I mean, for a big man who can do what he does, it is a discount. I guess I don't like giving him 4 years. That's my problem with it.
Because you don't know what he's going to be like 4 years from now. I mean, I think that doesn't his game kind of. I mean, like let's just say, I don't know. And here I'll throw this out there. I haven't seen a ton of Spencer Hawes play because I mean, why would I want to watch Philly?
Right. Or the Kings or the Kings of like 2007 to 2011.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, and no, but I mean, like you know, from what I've always seen him and stuff like that, I mean, you know, he definitely can stretch a floor. He's become a very good shooter. He's big. You know what I mean? He's certainly competent. You know, at a minimum.
Right.
And like, and really, I guess what you have to ask is you have to look at where they were last year, and they were in a position where you know the aforementioned Big Baby was their third best big for a quarter of the season. Are they a better bench when they have got Spencer Hawes and Big Baby? And I think they are.
Yeah, I mean like, you're upgrading from Ryan Hollins to Spencer Hawes. Like, you have certainly upgraded the talent on the roster.
Yeah, and I mean, like, and you know, and I think what they, it's oddly enough, the thing that they wanted to address most is they wanted to add shooting. And they wanted to become a better shooting team, which is when you looked at their roster last year, you would have thought they were a pretty good shooting team. I think they were 23rd in three-point percentage in the league.
Right.
You know what I mean? So they're in the bottom third. Now, by adding Spencer Hawes and Jordan Plummer, two good shooters, or two guys coming off good shooting seasons, and, you know, you're expecting, I think, a bounce back year from Jared Dudley, shooting the ball better. I think they think that Matt Barnes will be a little more consistent as well. Where does that put you now? You know what I mean? Like, if you move from 23rd to, say, 13th in three-point percentage, which seems to me like a reasonable jump based on kind of the talent they have, or even better, if they become a top-third three-point shooting team, you know, how much better does that make them offensively?
Oh, certainly. No, that's a good... I mean, you know? They could be a much better version of last year's Mavericks in the sense that it's just like... And this always sounds basic, but this was their philosophy of, like, we're just going to outscore you. Like,
and I think that they think that they're I think that that's part of their philosophy, that we're going to score a lot of points. But I do believe that they think that they, especially because they've got DeAndre Jordan, who they really believe in as a defender, that allows them to do other things defensively where they can be good enough. Take that back. Better than good enough defensively. Now, I thought that they were still kind of feeling out that system last year, but they felt like towards the end of the year that they were finally kind of put it together.
Yeah, I think I think they were a top 10 defense overall. It's just in the playoffs they struggled to get stops when they needed to, right? Something like that.
I mean, yeah, and it, you know, I mean, and it, part of it was because they played Steph Curry and then they played Kevin Durant,
right?
Russell Westbrook, right. You know, like that was part of it. Part of it also was things like, you know, Serge Ibaka, though, like having huge games and stuff like that. And they're gonna have to get better defensively. There's no question. But I do think that they felt that the added year in Doc Rivers' system, his abilities as a defensive coach, those things offset from a priority standpoint, the need to improve their shooting and to add depth. You know, so I think that's kind of how they prioritize their offseason. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the course of the year, because if that was the wrong move, you know, which is fun for us, we get to talk to the guy who made that decision before and after every game.
Yeah. And I guess they have, I mean, if it is the wrong move, they do have the assets to make moves in season.
I mean, yeah, to a degree, I think so. I mean, look, I everything that I was told was that they were pretty aggressive in trying to find a partner to upgrade at small forward. They looked at everybody.
And they went after Paul Pierce pretty heavy, right?
I mean, Paul Pierce, I mean, in free agency, they looked at, you know, I mean, via trade, you know, some of the Gerald Henderson, who else would think here? You know, I'd heard Terrence Ross's name mentioned. I had heard Gerald Green, Tony Allen, basically, if you were a small forward in the NBA, who wasn't on one of the three All-NBA teams, it could kick the tires maybe a little bit. You know, that they looked. And they tried to figure out ways to improve. And it just, the deal never materialized.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, that the value I think that they thought that, you know, Matt Barnes or Jared Dudley might have had via sign and trade just never. It just never came to fruition. You know, I mean, they looked at trading their first round pick. That didn't happen. I think in CJ Wilcox, they got a guy who can help, but this is Doc Rivers. I mean, he's not going to play him,
yeah.
Probably.
I love Wilcox, but I recognize he's probably not going to play for the first year or two.
Yeah, I mean, but he's a guy, though, I mean, at 23 right now already. I mean, you talk to him, it's like you're speaking to an adult.
Right.
And I think that there's a value in that. And bringing in a mature player when you're trying to compete, and this is a guy who's, you know, I think recognizes sort of what he needs to do to contribute. You know, and then I really, though, the question for them is going to be like, you know, was Jared Dudley last season the beginning of a decline because, you know, maybe his body and stuff like that isn't one that's going to age particularly well in the NBA, or that he was already kind of maximizing his athleticism, so any dip in that is going to cause problems, or is Jared Dudley going to be a guy who that was kind of the anomaly season? He had an injured knee early in camp that never got better, that he just had to play through because Matt Barnes wasn't healthy, so he was never able to really like get into the kind of shape he wanted to get into. So he never got into a rhythm. I mean, you can make that argument, certainly. Right. And that really, that the Jared Dudley they're going to get this year was the guy that I thought last year when they acquired him was maybe the perfect fit in a lot of ways for that team, the guy who doesn't need the ball to help you win.
Well, and also, Jared Dudley 2 years ago for Phoenix was this like super role player. And it was this thing when they made the deal to get Dudley and get Redick, it was, oh my God, this is a coup. Like, even though they gave up Bledsoe, like, this is like, what an incredible move by them. And then he came in out of shape and he doesn't have the athleticism to make up for even being out of shape at times. And he sucked last year. And even then, like, his numbers aren't that bad, you know?
He didn't shoot it nearly as well as he would have liked. He missed a lot of open shots.
Right. Yeah. But it didn't help
them the way that he thought. You know, he's not athletic enough to be a lockdown kind of individual defender. He, I think, is smart enough to be in a team system to be a good defender. They've got a lot of guys that are like that.
Yeah.
But I think he's got to be healthy to do it, and I think he's got to. It's like anything, you know. I mean, you know, I think your confidence gets affected and you struggle, you know. Yeah. So,
like, he shot 39%, 45%, 41%, 38%, 39% in the previous five seasons from 3-point range, and then he dipped to 36%, which is still not bad. That's above league average, but that's not the same effectiveness that he had. And you know, what is, like, you basically asked, like, is this the start of a trend downward, or was that an outlier?
Yeah. I mean, I think that ultimately they viewed, you know, I hear from a lot of Clipper fans that were upset with, you know, that if they could have gotten Paul Pierce for, you know, 2 years in the mid-level, they should have done that instead of Spencer Hawes. And then they figured all that out. And you know, maybe they can try to do a sign and trade or something else, like blah, blah, blah. You know, that Clipper fans, that's what I think a lot of Clipper fans wanted to see. They wanted to see an upgrade at small forward.
Right.
But honestly, like, I think people forget that, like, I mean, you thought you addressed that last year.
Right.
And, you know, like you said, this is a guy who's, you know, was 28 years old last year, who had the worst season of his career as a regular, and, you know, was hurt all year. So maybe he's better than that. You know, so, I mean, that's the question. I mean, his PER is that dropped from 14.9 to 8.9.
Yeah, I mean, he went from a pretty good role player to just a complete, like, non-starter in terms of being able to have an impact at all.
Yeah, and my feeling is, and from talking, you know, to people and talking a little bit to him this summer, he's worked very hard. I think he'll be in better shape when he comes into camp. I think that, and I think he knows that he's kind of at a point too. I mean, he's a guy who I think views kind of he's got an interesting view of sort of his career. He's very self-aware of his place in the NBA. He's not one of those guys who plays 22 minutes a game and thinks he should be playing 29.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or what he knows what he needs to do to win, and he knows what he needs to do to keep working in the NBA because, you know, those NBA checks are pretty nice from what I hear. And I do think that, I think that because of kind of where he is athletically, he's a guy that has to be in better shape. He just has to. And, you know, whether that was a knee injury, whether that was on him, you know, I mean, that's certainly up for debate, but I do think he'll be better in that regard this year, and that can only help him.
We're going to get a contract year DeAndre Jordan as well.
That too.
which is going to be interesting. You know, I mean, what step? He's been working out with Blake Griffin's trainer here in L.A. So, good news, he'll be in better shape, too.
Is that possible?
You know? I know. You know, it's 7.7% body fat he's been carrying. really cumbersome. No, I mean, and again, I think he's another guy who's going to really benefit from that second year under Doc Rivers. It's funny, you know, when you tell me you want to do this, and I started to think a little bit about the Clippers for the first time, outside of like the Sterling kind of realm in a little while. You know, that's one of the things is that you forget how that they were pretty close last year to making the conference finals, really.
Yeah,
you know, they lost like games or whatever.
Like, I know people like to think of them as like this soft team that doesn't have a strong mental, you know, capacity and all this stuff. Like, they're a really good team.
And I'm at the risk of sounding like a homer. They were really, I mean, they were a dreadful 90 seconds in Oklahoma City. Just dreadful in game five. But ultimately, Matt Barnes certainly fouled with Jackson, they botched that replay.
Yes.
It was a botched call.
Well, no. I disagree. I like the rule. You know, I think the rule is correct.
But that wasn't the rule they cited, though. Like, the hand is part of the ball rule?
Right. I think they got it correct and then cited the wrong thing.
Okay, well, that's certainly a possibility. But in terms of, you know, I mean, here, like, perfect world scenario, I think, in that situation, you view that and you say, oh, well, we fought them. Like, we can cover for that.
Right.
You know, whatever. But I mean, they felt like they got a job.
Yeah, they felt like they got screwed.
And, you know, whether or not they did or not, totally besides the point. But, I mean, like, if that goes their way and they win that game, they probably win that series.
Yeah.
My view. I mean, to me, that was sort of like,
well,
it couldn't.
It's not out of the realm of possibility that they take that and win that series.
I mean, you know, it was 2-2 there. You know, then it's 3-2, and they go back to Staples Center. They weren't. In that game six, I mean, like, that took so much out. They were already so frayed emotionally, you know, and I just felt like that was maybe just too much at that point. Like, the feeling that what else could go wrong? Oh, wait, the refs can steal a game from us. Like, that broke them. Now, do they have to be tougher? I guess, you know, ideally you would. Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
but
I think
that team went through a lot. Like,
yeah, that's
like,
that's a hard thing to be like. That's a hard thing to be like. Oh, this team's mentally weak. When, well, not too many teams every year end
no
up
one
going through that.
Any of that.
Right, that's not a typical environment to work in.
Yeah, no one's ever. You know, it's weird when you really it was just even covering it. Like, it wasn't like, and in no way am I equating myself to players. Like, I'm, you know, nowhere near the level of closeness for that. But just even covering it was super tiring, like, mentally. Because, like, you knew everybody was watching everything you wrote.
Right.
And reading everything you wrote. You didn't want to screw up. You know, you wanted to make sure that you were doing the absolute best you could. You wanted to do it the absolute best possible way. And when you're constantly doing that, that's exhausting.
It's,
when you feel that kind of pressure.
It's exhausting to have to do good work.
All the time. Okay, maybe I didn't sell that right. But you understand what
I'm No, I get what, right? I get what you mean.
And listeners, don't let Zach try to trick you into me saying that I don't always try to do good work. Okay, that's not what I'm saying. But like, when that environment was so exhausting.
Right.
That, you know, I'll be curious to see if this team, which remains largely intact, comes back next year stronger for it. That's certainly a possibility too.
You mentioned DeAndre Jordan is working with Blake Griffin's trainer. Is that we've had all these big men dropping off. Is that so he knows how to decline the Team USA camp invite in case he gets added this week?
So here's my theory about like this, is that the way that I would lead Team USA is that I think, like, you know, they're at the win or wherever they're at. I just think that, like, it's like 1:30 in the morning. I just don't even know. Like, slide a note under, like, Coach K's door. He's like, I can't do this.
Just say I'm out?
Just
leave a Dear John letter?
Yeah, and it's like they wake up in the morning and they're just like, where's Kevin Love? Where'd he go? Like, no,
someone go check the pool. Go see if he's down there.
I know. It is to the point now. I mean, like, and here, I don't blame him. I mean, like, how invested in the World Cup of basketball are you? I mean, I guess I'm excited to watch basketball again.
Yeah, I'm excited for it, but I'm a basketball nerd. Like, I don't have to play in it. I don't have to ruin my off-season training to go do it. And that's the thing, like, I don't think people understand is, like, these guys have these regimented off-season training plans that once you start deviating from it and go play actual basketball, like, there's a different kind of, like, exhaustion that comes in, and it does screw you up to where you have to get back into shape. And it's not that they weren't in shape in the first place. It's just from talking to players and seeing things up close, like, there's a lot that goes into being in NBA game shape, and not just like shape at the beginning of the season, but shape to where like you're ready to handle an 82 game season and maybe playoffs.
Yeah, I would say it's hard enough to play 82 games that I think, you know, for the guys that go through it, you know, more power to them. And it's a grind when you're like a consistent Team USA performer. Like, that's a lot of basketball.
Yeah, like Kevin Durant's not all that human. So for him, like, he just gets to play basketball and he's awesome. He doesn't really, like, he works on his game, but he doesn't really have to work on his game or add stuff all the time. Like, he's just that good. So he can go through it no problem.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean, like, I think that, you know, I think he benefit, like, he's a guy who really benefited from the Team USA experience, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
he went and really kind of, like, I mean, like, to a whole nother level and stuff. And, you know, I'm just like, this isn't the World Championships. This isn't the Olympics. Like, I don't know. Like, to me, this seems kind of like some, like, hey, we're signing you up to play in this tournament. We don't really know if people are going to care or not. We don't really know. Like, what network is it on? Do we know?
I have no idea. I would assume NBA TV.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not like, it sounds like a nice event, a nice international event, whatever. Like, and it's fun to get the best players in the world playing for the country against each other. But, like, this is clearly, like, I mean, this is the third, at least at the current moment, like, the third on the priority level, right, of, like, Team USA commitment.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, so, I don't know. I just like the idea that these guys are just, like, dropping out every few days. And just like, yeah, peace, see ya.
They're treating it like like a college class they didn't have to go to.
Yeah, right.
Like, I'm just going to take this drop slip to Coach K and get out of this, and now I'm going to have my morning spirit.
When's the drop without sale date is when? And the most important game, college kids, that you can know is the drop without sale date.
Right.
Yeah, no, like I said, I do like the idea that these guys are just like out there and then they're gone. They just disappear.
Like, they're in practice one day and they just throw down a smoke screen and just vanish out of the room.
As I always, like we said, it's like the episode of The Leftovers. They're one of their part of the 2%. You watching that? It's really good.
Watching what?
The Leftovers. I mean,
No, is that something I should do?
I mean, yeah, I think it's pretty good. Like, you like, how did you? What did you end up on Lost?
I loved it. I really like. I even liked the finale.
Really?
Here's the thing about that. Like, I wasn't emotionally invested in the show. I didn't spend, sure, I don't know how many years it was on, 7 years. I didn't spend 7 years, mm-hmm, like going week
looking
by week by
answers.
Week looking for answers. Like, I binge-watched it, and I, like, there wasn't all that much that was confusing to me because I binge-watched it, and I got to do, you know, I watched 4 or 5 episodes at a time. Like, so everything was fresh, and watching the finale, I was like, oh, it's not great, but I get it. Like, I understood what happened, and I understood, like, kind of the open-ended, like, maybe he's waking up, or maybe this is, you know, the end of it, or whatever. Like, it just didn't make me mad. Like, I didn't, and I'm also not someone who, like, needs closure in a show. Like, that's not important to me. Like, I'm just killing time anyway. This is how I killed my time. I'm fine with that. But I get, like, if you wanted closure in a show, like, it didn't give you great closure, and I get that.
And, you know, the premise of Lost is there's a plane crash on an island, and maybe the island is full of magic.
Right.
And I mean, that's like the 2-sentence pitch on Lost. And they're mostly like really pretty people doing it. It's like awesome. And we got a super funny fat guy. It'll be great. Everybody will love it. And so that's what got me on The Leftovers on HBO is like, from a premise standpoint, I can't think of a better premise that, you know, just one day 2% of the world just disappears and no one knows why. Like, people think it's the rapture.
you know, but then, you know, there's other people who think that can't be the rapture because these weren't all good people. You know, one of the things they to look for in the premiere, if you watch it, is they do list the celebrities that were part of the 2%.
Oh, I like that.
I believe Shaquille O'Neal was one of them.
Okay. I think there was like a show on HBO, or maybe it was on Showtime a long time ago, like in the 90s, and there was an episode, maybe it was like a miniseries. There was something on television once where there were like aliens came down and they said, we're going to rid you of all pollution and bad things, but you have to give us black people or something like that. Like, we take all of your black people. And there might have been like a slavery aspect to it, but it was like this weird like global decision of like, do we do this horrible thing so that we get no pollution? And I think they ended up doing it. It might have been a Twilight Zone. There was something though where I kind of feel like it's similar of like this inexplicable loss of a huge chunk of humanity. Maybe a listener can clue me in on what I'm thinking of. I have had head injuries, so who knows? Who knows if I this could have been a dream I had where I'm like, oh, I should be a movie producer, and this is what I would do.
So Jennifer Lopez and Gary Busey were also among the celebrities.
Oh, now I can't get behind losing Gary Busey.
Yeah, no, he's a treasure. But I think that's a really good show if you're looking for it. But see, these are shows you can't binge. These are things that you have to like because they're on right now. There's a show on Cinemax coming up too that I'm very excited about, which is a weird sense to say.
What Emmanuel in Space is it? Is it Emmanuel in Space 14?
It is not Zach, an episode of not the new season of Co-Ed Confidential or any Cinemax programming that you're familiar with. Emmanuel in Space 9. No, it is the name of it escapes me at the moment, but it is Clive Owen's in it.
Oh, and I'm sold.
It's about a hospital in like the 1920s or something when like they didn't know exactly how to be doctors.
Okay.
Just trying stuff.
Okay. This could be very it's like Mad Men for doctors.
I think of it more along the lines of like the trial and error of like surgery.
Okay.
And Steven Soderbergh's doing it.
And they're just giving like cocaine and heroin to children to cure things.
Yeah. Let's make a show about it.
All
right. We'll put it on Cinemax.
All right. I'll look that up.
I mean, I know it's not aliens coming down and taking a race, an entire race off the planet, which is.
God, I really hope I didn't. I really hope that wasn't like some weird dream.
Dude, that show, like when I said it, like that sounds super horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, alarming.
Like that sounds like. I mean, like people had to have gotten fired over that. Like, how could you ever?
That's
this seems like a good butt. This is a good button to tie on the like considering everything we've talked about. How could you be the guy? Whoever pitched another show after you're like, oh, I've got this great comedy, you know, and they're like, well, what else have you worked on? He's like, yeah, I created the show where the aliens came down and got rid of all the black people. Like, you could never work again.
By the way,
that was your show.
That Cinemax show is called The Nick. Oh, Nick's Tape.
Nick? Oh, Nick's Tape.
Is
J.R. Smith on it?
A look at the professional and personal lives of the staff at New York's Knickerbocker Hospital during the early part of the 20th century.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, and there's Clive Owen with like a derby hat, and he's got a pocket watch, and like a little doctor's pouch.
Okay, so I think from the trailer that I've seen of The Nick, looks terrific as well.
All right, I'm in on that. You have never steered me wrong on these.
No, I've got tremendous taste.
You've got. Well, I don't know about that, but you've got good credit built up.
Okay. Well, that's a fair point.
Yeah.
I mean, I am the man who brought you into Pitch Perfect.
Right. And I could never thank you enough for that.
To the point where someone recently wrote a story about like how Pitch Perfect became like the unofficial movie of the NBA internet. Did I read this recently?
Yeah, Steve McPherson.
Wrote something.
Steve
wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I was so disappointed I wasn't asked to be interviewed for that story.
Were you mentioned in it?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think I was either. Which it's kind of like
saying you're a little too close to the situation.
Kind of like Siskel and Ebert not being mentioned in a story about reviewing movies.
But the like, It has been an odd movie. Again, I watched a little bit of it today, and I had a softball game, and while I was playing outfield, I was singing to myself the start of the acapella part of the Bruno Mars song that they sing when they finally decide to remake.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like all day. That stuck in my head. So good.
Can I get you to sing a bar to sing us out of this?
There you go. Work from there.
Dan Wyke of the Orange County Register. We can follow you at Dan Wyke Sports.
Yeah, the name change hasn't happened yet. It might.
What are we changing it to?
We might just be dropping the sports.
Oh.
Okay, so here, that's what I'll ask these people who are still, for some reason, still listening to this.
They don't have a lot to do.
Come find me on Twitter and tell me how big of a pain that would be if I took the sports out.
Here's the beauty of it.
I want to know if there's a fallout to that move.
No, because it just autofills the name in for you anyway, and this is extra characters they can tweet at you.
Okay.
So there's no downside to this.
It's going to happen at some point in time.
Yeah, it's not like you would be changing Talk Hoops to Zach Harper. Like that. Yeah, there, no. That's a tricky one. You're just dropping, you know, what, five letters? No, six letters.
Yeah. I just got to make sure that your cohort over CBS, Matt Moore, doesn't already have at Dan Wyke as a Twitter.
He might.
He's got like nine of them.
He's got a lot of them.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, Zach.
Hey. Great talking to you, Dan.
Always fun.